California. It's tape number 384, side one, April the 13th, 1979. There are pieces of news that are in the newspaper every week that fit into the past tapes and subjects that I've discussed before. And I want to run through some of those with you because I don't like to lose track of these articles, and I want to share them with you while you can still get copies of them in the library if you want them. There's an article in the Washington Post, Sunday, April the 1st, 1979, on Simon Wiesenthal. They call him the Holocaust Avenging Angel. He's the gentleman who was rescued from a concentration camp during World War II and has spent his life trying to find Nazis that are still out large. He claims that there's 150,000 Germans that committed war crimes and that 95% survived the war. Wiesenthal estimates now that there's 15,000 to 20,000 murderers still free in South America, Spain, the Near East, Germany, and other countries. The thing that was interesting about this article was that there was a photograph of Gustav Franz Wagner being interviewed in Brazil in 1978. There was a birthday party for April the 20th for Adolf Hitler. And Wagner was seen at that time, and he helped organize the concentration camps at Treblinka. But in the whole year that has passed, there hasn't been any mention by Simon Wiesenthal about Wagner or having him return to this country. The name is hardly mentioned in the article, and I think it's interesting because they have his picture, and Vice President Mondale's been down to Brazil, and Jimmy Carter's been to Brazil, but there's never any effort to get these Nazi war criminals back to any country to be tried. I know a lot of you don't believe in my feelings or my research that Adolf Hitler did, in fact, escape. And I've been told by somebody who was in Argentina, came back last year about the birthday party and that he was there. And then I was told again this year, just several months ago, that he's now in Switzerland where he's dying, that he's in a sanitarium and dying. Some people have written me letters and said, what difference does it make if Hitler is alive or dead? It doesn't really matter if the process is kept intact that Hitler set up to keep the world in a turmoil until the Nazis could be in power again. And if it's working effectively, you don't need Adolf Hitler for your leader, but they could pull in Martin Bormann, and Reinhard Gehlen is still alive. And the books that I have on the reorganization of Germany after World War I and then the reorganization after World War II give every reason to believe that Adolf Hitler would want to live. If he had the planes to leave, and if he had the boats to leave, and he had the police and the money, and almost everyone around him was alive, and if he had doubles, and if they had dentures to match his, and physical body the same shape as the cook that was mentioned in Time magazine, May 7th, 1945, that took the place of Hitler, there would be no reason for Adolf Hitler to die. If there's all these other hundreds of thousands of Nazi war criminals out, certainly it would be nice to exist, and what reason would he have to die? There have been stories that he was insane, but we don't know if those were in preparation for his escape. I have many books on this subject, and I have personally talked with several people that have been down to South America and know a lot about the Hitler connections, and I have reason to believe them and trust them, and I keep studying the subject. I know that if you read the book, The File on the Tsar, or other books investigating the escape of the Romanovs from Russia at the time of the revolution, there's strong suggestion that they were allowed to live in exchange for Lenin leaving Switzerland and going to Russia. There's been much literature about John Wilkes Booth going to India and coming back to the United States. Michael Eddowes has a lawsuit in Texas to exhume the grave of Lee Harvey Oswald, that he doesn't believe Oswald is in that grave, and neither do I. I believe that Vance Cooper is buried where Howard Hughes is supposed to be. That Hughes actually died in 1971. And as you study history a little bit closer and don't fall for the cover story, there always is the possibility that Adolf Hitler did, in fact, escape through the U-2 boats and went down to Argentina and Antarctica. But whether or not he lives, his legacy lives, and thousands and hundreds of thousands of his agents are alive and functioning today. There's an article in the Sunday LA Times, April the 8th, 1979, on the fact that West Germany is selling arms all over the world, that their Nazi past hasn't stopped them from sending weapons. The article said that China wants to buy from West Germany battle tanks. Peru and Venezuela are buying submarines from West Germany shipyards. Iraq is buying 360 hot anti-tank missile systems that are made by West Germany and France together. That Egypt is producing Alpha Jet Trainer Light Strike aircraft made by French and German combined. And West Germany is allowed to sell weapons to the NATO countries. They're still making weapons for Ireland, Austria, Sweden, Switzerland, Spain, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. And they're making weapons that are being sent illegally into Rhodesia and South Africa. And they're making weapons for the third world countries. Those, of course, can go in the hands of military dictatorships, and persons can be killed who want to change the course of what you call the Third World, and German weapons are going into those countries. There's a picture on the cover of Washington Post a week and a half ago of Israeli Prime Minister Begin walking beside Egyptian soldiers, and an announcer on television said that here's Prime Minister Begin, and he doesn't seem to mind the Nazi helmets and the goose steps. If you look up the picture on the cover of Washington Post, April 9, 1979, there's a clear picture of Begin surrounded with the Nazi helmets and the goose-stepping soldiers. And if you do a little research into the books on Reinhard Gehlen and the history of Sadat, you realize that he was linked to Nazis and the Bormann Brotherhood. And I'm sure the bond is very strong, and I'm sure that the plans to have Israel pulled back its oil territory and its original lands to a smaller place than where it was after its last short battles, and then within at least 10 years it will be vulnerable and can be wiped off the map. Israel is very vulnerable, and I think this is a temporary patch job that will not mean peace to Israel. I'd be very, very surprised if these people that were involved with Adolf Hitler and Martin Bormann can change in midstream and become peacemakers. Another article about Argentine making fake U.S. visas. This was in the Washington Post. Charles Krauss, at least 3,000 illegal aliens, some from North Korea, South Korea, and other countries, which are not named, get passports into the United States from the U.S. consulate. A ring may have been involved in $5 million of payment for giving false travel papers. This is April of 1979, but the Vatican was writing passports for Nazi agents after World War II to go down to Argentina and South America, and then Argentina was writing passports for people like Martin Bormann and other agents to travel all around the country. And as I said on the tape a few weeks ago in that book, Treason for My Daily Bread, it brings up the fact that Argentina could write fake passports and send a killer into the United States to assist in the killing of John Kennedy. The book has not really been circulating enough to be proven or disproven, but there's some pretty interesting facts that I talked about that fit in with my other research. So it just comes out this week that there's still, this is 20 or 30 years of false papers, but this is $5 million worth of false papers written in Argentine, so the people can come from all over the world and come into the United States and stir up some more trouble here. Another article, March 25th, a dispute over releasing funds for investigating 175 Nazi war criminals in the United States. Congressman Elizabeth Holtzman in Brooklyn, a Democrat from Brooklyn, has been working with the House Subcommittee on Immigration, Refugees, and International Law for several years. There was a $2 million fund to investigate a special litigation unit on Nazi war crimes. No one can figure out, according to the New York Times, why there's a delay in investigating it. The Justice Department hasn't been serious about the prosecution. Not a single attorney has been hired since May of 78, despite repeated requests for the Nazi task force head and Congress. Congress allocated $2,052,000 for direct use by the unit, and it hasn't been used. There's no staff, no attorneys, and they're not looking for these Nazis. This year is the last year of prosecuting Nazi war criminals, unless the German government changes their mind on that statute. Some say it's long enough, and others say they're hiding until this period is over. And the Immigration Department and the State Department under Mr. Burrell and Richard Nixon, going back right after World War II and continuing through other politicians and administrations, have brought in known Nazi criminals, have protected them, and when they get too old, like Mr. Arturkovich down in Southern California, they'll say, well, they're too old, justice can't be served, they've lived their lives out, leave them alone. There are some powerful forces trying to get Barbara Holtzman's seat, get her out of the Congress, just in the way that Bell Abzug was pushed out in New York City, and she's been working on this job for 2 years, trying to get this investigation going, and has had no cooperation from the Justice Department. I see in the New York Times, April the 5th, that a synagogue was burned in, this is in New York City, in Brooklyn. This is April the 5th, 1975. And in the same newspaper, April the 5th, 1975, there were 700 headstones vandalized at Jewish cemeteries in Staten Island. 700 gravestones were overturned, damaged, or defaced at two Jewish cemeteries at Staten Island over the weekend. And they're talking about protecting other Jewish cemeteries. 450 gravestones at Mount Richmond Cemetery and 200 gravestones at the United Hebrew Cemetery. And then in East Haven, Connecticut, April the 1st, a synagogue said that they would give $500 reward to tell them who was doing the vandalism up in Connecticut. That there's Connecticut vandalism against a synagogue there. And in the last 3 years in Connecticut, they've had 200 tombstones, some weighing 1,000 pounds, that were turned over. That's in the last 3 years up in East Haven, Connecticut. The New York Times, April the 5th, the same date, had a lot of news. There's one Paraguay alien tied to murders in native land, and they found in Brooklyn, again in Brooklyn, a man living there with a woman and a nephew and a child who was recognized as coming from Paraguay. His name is Mr. Pena, and the federal agents have been looking for him, and he's been living in a Sephardic Jewish neighborhood in Paraguay. He's been involved in the killing and torture of the opponent of General Alfred Stroessner, another Nazi war criminal who is running the military government down in Paraguay, and his opponent's son was 17-year-old, was picked up and tortured and killed. And Mr. Pena left the country when the father was investigating the case. This doctor, the political opponent against Stroessner, was investigating the murder of his son. And Mr. Pena left, came to Miami as a tourist, and stayed and moved into New York City to Borough Park and resided there, as I say, among the Sephardic Jewish neighborhood. He's wanted for torture and murder, and he was with a companion who also has been involved in violence and crime down in Paraguay. The boy had died. He was beaten and received high-voltage electric shocks. And he was looking for Mr. Pena, who did get charged with the murder charges, but then he left Paraguay, came to New York City, was exiled rather in Queens, not in Brooklyn, living in Queens with another woman, and they have located him there. Somebody who was tortured by him in Paraguay recognized him in Brooklyn, and he was living in Queens, and he was living with, as I say, another woman and a child that had been in custody now of the officials. But he came easily into this country when he was wanted down there for murder and torture. You see, Interpol doesn't catch these kind of people. It catches youth smoking marijuana or some minor crimes, but people wanted on murder and torture linked to the Nazis can easily get into this country. Last week, on tape number 383, I was talking about election death, coincidence or conspiracy. I talked about Robert and Cora Smith Smith several times, who were murdered just before the South African elections in 1977. And I talked about the death of Sir Alfred Broughton of a heart attack, one of the major members of the Labour Party, who died just at the time of the election, not the election, but the vote of confidence before the British Parliament. I forgot to mention among those killed was the blowing up of Airy Neave, N-E-A-V-E, a war hero, World War II hero, a conservative member of Parliament. Very often the conservatives are blown up at election time in France and Germany and Italy, and they're kidnapped to gain sympathy for the Conservative Party. By killing their own kind, it turns against those people that would want to help the Irish in England or the Labour Party, and a lot of sympathy then goes out to Mr. Neave and his family, and the Conservative, Ms. Thatcher, can be voted in, get a show of confidence, and try to win the election in May. I don't believe that the left pulls these kinds of murders just prior to election, knowing that it would hurt their chances or their sympathies. But whenever elections come up in this country or overseas, that's known as the Reichstag syndrome. Burn your own place and bomb your own place to make the left look violent and sick, and vote us in because we'll give you law and order and stop the violence. I didn't mention, when I was talking about election violence last week, the murder in England of Airy Neave just at the time of the show of confidence there. Another kind of violence, again, always when a group of people or a leader is helping the peasant or the working class or the middle class to get ahead, they're systematically being murdered. And I'm really not sure how many of you people who take the tapes are aware of this syndrome and how constant it is. We can talk about John Kennedy being killed after he won the election in 1960, Robert Kennedy on the night of his nomination, his victory in California, his primary victory where he could get the Democratic nomination. Wallace shot in May of 72, just before the election. The votes going to the conservative, Richard Nixon. Well, overseas there's violence all the time, too. There's an article in the New York Times on Guatemala opening new lands. The best goes to the rich. And it tells about a successful experiment in peasant resettlement that was begun in 1970 by an American Mary Knoll priest, the Reverend William Woods. And it says that Father Woods began by getting land in a western province of Guatemala and organizing it between 2,200 families into a cooperative to raise cattle and grow coffee and spices. But then Reverend Woods was killed. It says the army takes control of the cooperative because Father Woods was killed in a mysterious plane crash, and a West German priest, Reverend Carl Stetter, who took his place, was expelled from Guatemala. They let a German come in and take his place for a few months, and he was kicked out. And then the army takes control of the entire agricultural commune, and the AID, which is the CIA, the American Aid, that group has been always linked with the CIA. So what happens is that the project, described very nicely in the New York Times, now belongs to the rich. The best land goes to the rich because the people that dreamed of the cooperative for peasants and agricultural improvements are deprived of a leader such as Father Woods. He's killed in a plane crash. In comes a German to take over, and then in comes the army, and the peasants again are pushed aside, and the rich take over the land. This is something that has been going on and on. I don't know if the cycle can ever end or will ever end, but I think people should be aware when they talk about John Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy or the shooting of George Wallace or the Chappaquiddick accident, that these are not isolated events, that you have to study what happened before them and what's happening today and realize that the process continues every hour of the day around the clock by the same people. I've been getting telephone calls and letters and interest in the tapes that I did, the two tapes on the book Alternative 3, and I'll try to update as much as I can. I still don't know and can't find a Robert Groden who was in the space program, but there was a convention here last weekend, the weekend before last, on space, And the guest speaker was Russell Schweickart. He was the man that had the lunar module piloted in 1969 and stayed 241 hours in space and commanded the first Skylab mission in 1973. Schweickart was supposed to speak the evening of this conference, and I was going to hear him and ask him about Alternative 3. And then Jerry Brown called him off because he's also his advisor for space-related matters, and because of the danger of the nuclear plant in Pennsylvania and their twin plant in California that could also go bad, he was called off and couldn't lecture. I think it's interesting that the same man that was doing the space projects and the Skylab missions should be the expert for Governor Brown on the atomic problems and the space problems for NASA in the state of California. But there was an afternoon lecture there at the conference grounds here in Monterey. In the afternoon lecture, there was Dr. Brian O'Leary from Princeton, who does work with Dr. O'Neill, who was written up in Alternative 3, and he quoted Dr. O'Neill the lecture, and somebody who was in town who takes these tapes went to the lecture in the afternoon, and this man described the asteroids, the building of space homes, and that space living is the answer for our needs for energy and food and room in which to live, and he praised the needs of the people for this space program. And O'Leary is a specialist on the mining of asteroidal materials for manufacturing in space. He said that there's a depletion of the Earth's resources and that we will have to go into space for energy, food, and room to live. If you read the book The War Against the Jews, 1933 to 1945, by Lucy Dowitz, she talks about the Nazi concentration camps and Treblinka and all the organizations of the Nazi concentration camps, and she tells how the Nazis got the Jews from Poland, from the ghettos, to go into the extermination camps, and they explained that they cordoned off the ghettos and the people were very hungry, and so they told them that they were going to be resettled, and resettlement was the euphemism for transporting them to the gas chambers. So that they would tell them that there's marmalade and toast and honey. And she talks about offering them food, and this was attractive to them because they were starving. So they went to the ghettos of Poland. This is from the book on page 187. And they ravaged the inmates, and they gave them offers. This is where hunger ravaged the inmates. And they made offers of bread and marmalade and induced thousands of Jews to turn up voluntarily for resettlement. Resettlement became the euphemism for the process of transporting Jews to the gas chambers, and once they arrived and Himmler had ordered their resettlement of them to these camps, then they were deported from the Warsaw ghetto at Treblinka, where the gas chambers were completed and they began gassing them. So I wonder, when they talk about solving space and energy and food and room in which to live, if this isn't the same resettlement program that the Nazis had, being as a spacecraft program was totally developed by the Nazi organization. Wernher von Braun and the top Nazis were always the masterminds behind NASA and the space program. Along the lines of Alternative 3, there was an article, Associated Press story, March 29th, 1 in 10 babies doomed. Now, remember, the purpose of Alternative 3 of eliminating billions of people was that 222,000 are born every day and 34 million a year. This article from the Associated Press said almost one-tenth of all the children born last year may die before their first birthday. They may die before their first birthday. The Director General of WHO, World Health Organization, said. Dr. Mahler said that 125 million babies were born in 1978, but that 12 million would die their first year. And he said, this is only the tip of the iceberg. There will be a greater tragedy in the survivors because of adverse economic conditions or social conditions or environmental conditions. They will not enjoy the fruit of good health or develop to their full human potential. Now, the question is, if you change the adverse economic conditions, if you change the social conditions, such as racism, where you want to kill all the blacks or all the yellows or all the red, or the environmental conditions where you don't use space satellites for droughts and famines or floods or whatever, or earthquakes or disease. If you didn't use those, could these people live on, say, bean products, be employed, be useful? Or is their death already designated when you read in the newspaper, Associated Press story, that 12 million children will die next year that have lived only 1 year, if they're lucky? But that's the tip, and that fits in with the whole thesis of the book, Alternative 3. For those of you who have this tape, you'll have to go back to the other tapes I referred to and look at the list of them, because I went into detail about this book that's available in Canada, but so far hasn't been purchased in the United States. And some of you who are getting books, let me know if you're able to get it in the United States. You may or may not have received some literature about a plan to boycott Nestle's chocolate and Nestle's products, and I'll give you the address if you want to send to the group that have, it's called the Nestle Boycott Infant Formula Action Coalition. It's called, in fact, headquarters in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And there's a list of products that Nestle's makes, and the allegations are that they're sending milk over to the third world formula that is killing the third world children off. Now, Nestle's argues that they don't make much profit out of selling it, but the point is that they may be distributing it for genocide, even if you sold the gas to the extermination camps just at cost. IG Farben may not have made any profit off of the gas that exterminated 6 million people, but they made worldwide contracts and cartels because they exterminated, and that's a big difference. An article in the San Francisco Examiner, the Associated Press story, April the 8th, 1979, bottle feeding is a killing third world babies, and it talks about children's graves in Zambia that are decorated with baby bottles and empty tins of formula. The World Health Organization, again, is quoted in saying that these children are being killed, that powdered formula is mixed with contaminated water, that the bottles and nipples are not sterilized, that the formula can't be refrigerated, and that many children are dying, third world children are dying from this kind of formula that is sent over there. Now, the four major companies targeted for criticism are Nestle of Switzerland, which has the largest share of third world formula market. And then there's three other companies, Abbott Laboratories, that makes Similac, Bristol Myers, which is Mead Johnson subsidiary, and Wyeth International. I'll give you the addresses, and if you want to write to them and check out the byproducts, there's a list of 20 or 30 products of Nestle's alone. And I think that there's a purposeful intent to murder all these people, this third world population, and not allow them to live. And one way is to send in something which they can't use and which is starving their children. There is a campaign to boycott this product, and I think every little bit that you do in that direction is useful to express your feelings about genocide, because I'm sure that there are ways for them to control the 34 million that are born each year already are marked for death before they're a year old, as the tip of the iceberg explains. All of this death talk isn't really nice to throw on you the week of Passover and the week of Easter, but again, those are holidays that symbolize spring. It took place this last week, or this week, Good Friday, today, Passover this week, and it symbolizes spring and hope, resurrection, and parsley for spring at the Passover. But they also symbolize death, the intent of Pharaoh to kill all the Jewish children, the fight for survival against genocide back in those days, the crucifixion of Jesus because he stood up to the Romans, the Roman army, the family sitting back and watching Jesus be crucified. Maybe some of you saw the 8-hour television movie about Jesus. I never could understand how friends and neighbors and family all gawked as Jesus was strung up on the cross and didn't raise a finger to take him down. Apathy is nothing new. So sometimes I wonder, what is the purpose of even talking about this, because most people are so apathetic that it's pitiful. But I guess I talk about these things and try to expose them because, for me, the only meaning in life is to be aware of problems and try to change them. I don't pretend that I can change them through educating myself or sharing my information with you, but I just feel better doing it. When I see stories, the movie Hair, and at the end it shows the untimely death of a young man and the huge cemetery of veterans there, I feel good that I was in the anti-war movement and at Kezar Stadium and around the post office and the demonstrations and protesting what I saw in Southeast Asia. I feel better showing my outrage, and I feel healthier about it, and so I keep doing it. But this season of Passover and Easter is also one that has to do with murders and conspiracies, so we know that nothing is really new. More on the other side of this tape about Jonestown and death. We'll continue with that happy theme. It's the theme of the season, I think.